Session number 20510, Reel 2.
Reel 2, Peter Harbour. So, the light infantry pace, I mean, that was something that was...
No, we didn't do the light infantry. That was the very quick march. We did the normal standard march, I think. I don't know what that was. I couldn't tell you the paces to the minutes, but the light infantry were different. They were really fast marchers. But we just did the basic march, really.
So, I mean, you did route marches, didn't you?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes.
They were very concerned. You were telling me that they saw you as a sort of forerunner of the SAS. I mean, they were training you for a particular things, weren't they?
Yes, so that's right.
How did they do that? What sort of different things were they?
Well, you see, the reconnaissance was formed in 1941 with the full intention of being the spearhead of the British Army, which, of course, was the general idea. And in lots of cases, it was. Because the idea was that we were trained as reconnaissance men to go forward in front of the infantry and army and get information about the contact the Germans, if necessary get information about things, if we necessarily we have to fight for it, and reported back to our headquarters, which then went back to Div headquarters, and that's where in the future, in the next sequence of events took place. And we were trained to act like cat and mouse, because we had to see the Germans, or the enemy as you might call them, and they were looking out for us at the same time. And there were times when we were miles in front of our own army. I mean, the push through France, we were 20 miles in front of our own enemy to keep in touch with the retreating Germans.
So, can you see what parts of your initial training they were bringing together various skills, weren't they?
Oh, yes, that's why we had to be... there was only three... We were the most mobile units in the British Army. And that's why we had to be a driver, wireless operator, and marksman. Because we had to get the messages back over the wireless. We had to be able to drive if the driver got knocked out. And also take over whatever position was got it.
And where did you do your marksman training?
On the range. I mean, I always remember, I never fired a rifle in my life. Well, not officially. And we went on the range. And I went up to Scarborough first when I went to Scarborough, and a 303, and I had 5 balls. I never did it again. I had 4 occasionally, but and I had 5. On the first time I'd fired a rifle, I was chuffed. Never let them forget that.
So what other weapons training did you do?
Well, Bren gun and... pistol firing, of course, but Bren gun was our heaviest that I actually learned to fire when I was in Germany, in France. I just carried a Bren gun around with me and fired from it. I didn't carry a rifle, but that's the heaviest I had contacts with. We had I forget the name of them now, but on the armoured cars, there was a bigger weapon. Quite honestly, I can't remember the names of them.
And did you do?
And I was in armoured cars for about 2 years, and then I transferred to Bren gun carriers. Then when I was over in Bren gun carriers, I went to France.
So did you do bayonet training? And
how? Oh, yes, yes, yeah.
How did you take to that?
Well, I thought I just accepted it as part of the training. I think some of the fellows, I think, were a bit dubious about it. I the only time that I really felt anything was when I first went over to Normandy. And we were on a hill called the Ridge. It was my first reaction to my first actual live war, actually. And I was sent up, I was asked by my CO to go up to a forward OP, which was a few yards from the top of the ridge. And we had to go up. I think we went up in the evening, after dark, relieved the other section of the troop. And while we were up there, my CO came up on his tummy, and he said, "Now, Corporal Harbury said I want you to take one of the other lads, and I want you to crawl up and look over the ridge and see if there's any movement going on over there." Because there'd been a crossroad that they hadn't been able to take. We'd been there for about fortnight, I think. And so I, a fellow named Trooper Jones, Doug Jones, we always called each other by Christian names, and because we were like a family. And he said, "Come on, Pete," he said, I'll cover you." And we crawled up probably about 75 yards past dead animals, dead bodies, the stank and blood flies all over it, because it was a lovely summer that year. Sun was brilliant. And we got, and I looked over the top and I couldn't see anything going on. And very quiet. And as it happens, it was. They'd moved back from there. And I crawled back to the OP point and reported that there were no sign of movement. And off the officer went. We were supposed to be in there 24 hours. We were there 36 hours. And the idea was that if you heard the noise or any sign of anyone coming up the road or anyone coming from the opposite direction, was to up with a very pistol and get out, you see, so that they'd know, in the our own troops would know something happening. So I don't know what time of night it was. We heard this scuffle up the road, and it was movement, definitely movement. So there were four troopers with me. So I said, "There's something happening there." So, you know, you got your binoculars, but they're not do any good at night, do they? I mean, they're not infrared like they do today. And I said, "Oh, well, I'm going to make sure of it first." So I was there with the glass, and I suddenly turned around, and the other four had gone. They had upped and gone. So, of course, I'm not standing for this, so up I went with the very pistol, because we were all green, weren't we? Our first sign of action. And up went the very pistol, and I was off, and I was about 50 yards behind the others. So they got over the line, and a couple of our lads opened up on me, thinking I was the enemy, following them in. So that was my first sign of action, was my own troops firing on me. And I got back to the line, and of course we were dug in. I got in a slit trench, I went to sleep, and I woke up, and I shook. I couldn't keep a limb still. I couldn't hold a cup of tea to drink it. I don't remember how long it lasted, but from that day I didn't turn a hair. I mean, there's times when you're frightened, but everyone at times when they're had a bit of fright about them, but I never turned a hair from that day on. I took everything in my stride.
So, just getting back to the weapons training, so you did rifle and bayonet training and hand grenades. What else do you, any sort of machine gun?
Well, we did mine seeking and things like that. We had to, you know, we had to learn about the mines and things.
What did they teach you?
Well, how to, you know, if they were minefields, you were taught to sort of clear, find them, and I don't remember now where the details of things, but we were trained. We were trained to dismantle them and everything. Yeah.
How did you find them?
That's the time when you're frightened, I think. I'll be quite honest. I mean, they can go off anyway, can't they?
So what did you use to find them?
Well, bayonets, really. No, bayonets we were using to probe the ground with. We didn't have, used to have the old metal seekers then, did they?
So when you found them, how did you disable them?
Well, of course, I don't remember. It's so long ago that it... So, I mean, you take the fuse edge and some, you evidently find the fuse and have to just take the fuse out, and that was it. But they're so delicate, you have to be very, no good shaking.
Did you ever do that?
I didn't, unfortunately. Well, fortunately, I didn't have to do it, but I did the training for it, yeah.
An anti-tank weapons or defences or anything?
We had an anti-tank section in the regiment. And so I didn't have anything to do with that, no. They were specially trained for tank. We had a tank section, anti-tank section, and a wireless section.
Did you do any anti-gas precautions or training?
Any what?
Anti-gas precautions or training?
No, we went through the actual... I didn't actually go into gas chambers or anything, but of course we had to train with our gas mask on. But I didn't personally go into a gas chamber to have the experience of it, so I can't say that.
So what about tactics and field training? I mean, they were training you for something quite specific, weren't they? Can you remember how they trained you?
Oh yes, I mean, when I joined the regiment, eventually, of course, we were training on South Downs and. On the south coast, and very often we were given our job to seek the enemy, you see, and then we had to lie back and let the infantry go and do the job. That was the idea. We were always first in. We used to find the enemy, and then we had to report back, and the infantry came in through us. And that was the exercise we used to do on drowns. And
so how did you find the enemy? I mean, tell me about some of the skills that you used and... techniques on an exercise. This is
what Maidstone was. Well, of course, camouflage was the main thing. That's one thing. The thing was to be see but not be seen. That was our motto. And our unofficial motto is only the enemy in front and all the other beggars behind. So, which is, in fact, it's the truth in respect. The tactics were to seek and observe, really. I mean, there were times when you got into scrapes, of course, but the general idea was to get information back to the division.
What did you think about the quality of the training you were given? This was done by men who'd done this in action, was it?
I don't think so. They might have been... Yeah, they could have been come over from Dunkirk, you see, some of the old soldiers. They were certainly old soldiers, a lot of them. But they were specially picked originally for the training purposes, but... Once you got the regiment, of course, you became a family. It was like one big family. I mean, you were like brothers. We used to sleep together, fight together, and live together, and do everything. Because we were such a close unit. As I say, there was a vehicle to every three men. Okay, that's and you lived like a family.
Can you tell me about the unit? You know, about the organisation and the establishment?
Well, the 53rd was stationed at Maidstone, Autumn. In Autumn, my squadron is Autumn, and HQ was next door. And there was HQ squadron. There was A, B, and C squadron, three squadrons, an anti-tank section, signal section. And that's really all there was to it, really. I mean, I don't know whether you've studied the reconnaissance at all, or you can borrow this if you wish.
I don't know whether I've got time to read it.
You can borrow it if you wish. Take it with me, let me have it back.
Yes, I'll have a look at it at lunchtime, yeah.
And what
so
else?
Do you remember the officers? I mean, how many officers you've got and so on?
Well, in there it will tell you, but I'm afraid I couldn't give you the definite numbers. I mean, we used to have a troop officer, used to be a lieutenant or a second lieutenant, and then there used to be the squadron commander and his adjutant, and so there'd be about 8 officers to a squadron, or more, probably 10 officers to a squadron. And then you used to have HQ with all the echelon and the adjutant and the CO. And but the 53rd was definitely, in my opinion, a wonderful regiment to be in.
Did they tell you anything, or did you learn anything about the history of the unit?
Well, there was no history, was there? They were formed in 1941, and my regiment was first stationed in Ireland, Ballykinlow, I think. I've heard a lot about Ballykinlow. I wasn't there myself, but that's where it was first formed, in Ireland. And I think they came back from, when they came over to England, they went to Tunbridge Wells, and then this is all I know about the. I mean, we were a young unit, weren't we? We'd only just been formed.
Was there a great sense of loyalty and pride there?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yes, I mean, that's where they got the scraps for.
And you said that you had been specially picked for this unit. Do you know what they saw?
No, I don't think. I mean, they do say that we were picked, but I don't think we were really. I mean, they all say that we were picked for our intelligence and our fitness and one thing and another. About 5 or 6 different things that they said that we were selected for, but I can't say it. So I think we happened to be in the book at the time, but we became a very good unit, a very combative unit as well. And I'm proud of being in the 53rd Reconnaissance Corps.
Can you remember any of your NCOs in the unit?
Yes, a few. Yeah. And I'm still in contact with one of them.
Tell me about him.
Peter Upton, who was the first lieutenant who came to the squad, the regiment, and he was my troop leader. And he was a real green officer, and he was going to win the war, Peter was. So he was a very keen young officer. But he eventually became second in command of my squadron. He became adjutant of the regiment, and eventually took over my squadron as major. Finished up as Major Upton, and I've got his name and address in here, in my address book, somewhere.
Do you remember any particular incidents involving him,
not particularly, because he wasn't with us when he went over into action. I don't remember who my officer was. Winestaff was my officer, Lieutenant Weinstaff was my officer, and I remember going on a training scheme with him once, and it was snowing. And all we had to do was, we were stopping 2 or 3 days on this exercise. And I remember the night time, we had to get down in our blankets and everyone was freezing. So I said to Lieutenant Weinstock, because I don't know why it became involved, but I said, I'll make this bivouac up. We used two ground sheets and made a tent, made a little bivouac. And I did the old, what they call the double blanketing. And we got in together, and we actually stripped off down to our underpants, and we were snug as a bug in a rug. And the others woke up in the morning, they'd all been awake, they were frozen to death. And I always remember that as one of the training sessions, right? And they some mugs, you know. I mean, you can't beat body heat, can you? And I mean, nothing to it. It was just body heat. And we woke up in the morning, pulled the thing away, and they were all...
So what other training did you? You must have done a lot of training.
And we did exercise training, yes, on the South Downs and the wastelands of the South Coast, and I don't remember the names of them. Mm-hmm. I remember the South Downs, because that's the main one we used, really.
And what sort of exercises were you doing?
Well, cross country work with Ben Gunn carriers, armoured cars. I mean, going through ditches and even rivers. I mean, we had to make out, if we came to a river, we didn't know how deep it was, we had to get across it, and we had to improvise. I mean, there was a time when because I was a pretty good swimmer, I remember a fellow dropped a rifle in, or a brain gun in the middle of the river, and he couldn't swim very well, so I just went in and got it out for him. Dived in and got it out for him. And there's a remark in there about one of the other, an officer who did the same thing, but I actually didn't. But you don't get everyone's individual reports in a history book.
So do you think your training was effective in preparing you for?
Oh, I think so, yes. Naturally, you never prepared for the real thing. I mean, you never can be. I mean, that's only through going in it. I mean, you talk about The Bridge Too Far. I mean, it's a wonderful film, but you don't get the atmosphere with watching a film. It is actual from being there. All right, I wasn't a Darwin, but I was very close to it. That's where I got blown up, trying to get through to them.
Yes, we'll come on to that.
Yes, that's right.
So where do you think the trainers got their experience from?
Well, I think a lot of them were all regular soldiers, the initial trainers. They were regular soldiers, so I couldn't really tell what experience they'd had. But they were mostly regular soldiers.
Was there anyone who abused their position? Any bullying that went in?
Not to my knowledge. The only thing I saw was friendly barter. And I remember queuing for our mail one day with our cans and everything, and suddenly there was argument flared up, and it was a corporal and a trooper, and they finished up in an emptiness and that, and they belted hell out of each other, and they were the best of friends before they did it, and they were the best of friends after they finished. They couldn't have been closer friends. But something was said, and that was it. They were both in the boxing team. But generally, I didn't come across a lot of it. There might have been, of course. I mean, I was only in a small section of the unit, wasn't I? But as far as my own experience, no, I didn't experience it.
How did the other ranks get on with the officers? Were you friendly? Or?
Oh yes, we were like a family. I mean, we had to be. We couldn't have operated unless we had.
But there were boundaries, were there?
Yes, very strict. As far as discipline and recognition of different officers and ranks were concerned. I mean, the regiment was really bull. I mean, we had inspections and parades every week, every weekend, and if you didn't come up to scratch, you were on the next day, or, I mean, even the cross-country running on a Friday. If you came behind the CO, it was in his late 40s, if you came behind him, you ran the next day. You know, that was how we had to do it. It was done, and we had inspections every weekend where we were supplied with shoulder epaulets and a lanyard, which originally the only people who'd had that was the guards. And we were granted these epaulets. And then because someone found that there was a clause in the army books that we shouldn't have them, we were taken away from us. But only a few weeks after, Churchill came down to the regiment, and within a matter of weeks of him being there, we had them back again. So that's how the type of thing we did, you know. They thought so much of us to grant us that.
Where was the regiment when Churchill visited?
Maidstone. Yeah. I remember him being there, yeah. Yes.
What date would that be?
I don't recall the dates. It's in that book, actually, but yeah. I don't recall the dates. Yeah. And
so
he was photographed in the
1942.
In the national papers.
So do you remember his visit? Tell me about that.
Well, I only remember him being there. I mean, I don't remember a lot about it. It's such a long time ago. You know, I mean, I remember him standing on what we used to call the greasy pole, and that's where he was photographed and put in the paper. And they said if he could balance his... they said if he could balance that, or as balance his public life, or what I said, say, the general life, as well as he balanced on that pole, he'd be a good man. Oh, excuse me.
End of Reel 2.